Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
Hello, everyone, and thanks for tuning in. And I'm Joanne White. And many of us are thinking about we want to turbocharge our business and create more success in our lives and our relationships. And we look at all these different formulas for doing that and business strategies. And I'm not saying throw that away, but I actually have this incredible guest that we're going to speak with in a moment who is going to share something with you, a whole philosophy, laws of success that may actually put all the things that you've learned in a totally different perspective. And I'm talking about Bob Berg, who's a longtime member of the National Speakers Association, an international best-selling author. He is a sought-after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences, shares the platform with everyone from today's business leaders and broadcast personalities, even a former United States president. His book, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann, has sold over 500,000 copies and has been translated into 21 languages and released in a new expanded edition, which I'm very excited about. Great present for this holiday, with a foreword by Huffington Post founder and publisher Arianna Huffington. He is an advocate, a supporter, and defender of the free enterprise system, and he believes that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people that they serve. He has built his business and shows others how to build their businesses based on one overriding foundational principle, and that is, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people that they know, like, and trust. You're going to find out about his five laws of stratospheric success and so much more. Welcome, Bob Berg. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Dr. Joanne, thank you so much. I've loved getting to know you on social media. I love how you engage people, and your kindness and heart comes right through. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I have this wonderful gem here that I've been pouring through your book, The Go-Giver, and I'm going to have to order the new version because I want to see what that's about. It's expanded, but let's just get right into it, because many people, like I said in the intro, are looking for specific business strategies, and you come across with definitely this very profound way of being in business and in the world that makes for success. So describe that a little bit, if you will.
Sure. The basic premise of the book and the I guess philosophy, if you will, itself, is simply that shifting one's focus, and that's really the key, shifting one's focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. And that doing so is not only a nice way, a pleasant way to live life, it's actually a very financially profitable way as well.
So when you say value, what do you mean by value? It's not giving money to people necessarily, or go. What connotes value, Bob?
Sure. Value can be defined as the relative worth or desirability of something, desirability of a thing to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, overall experience, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to someone that they'll be glad to, they'll be willing to exchange their money or their time or their energy, what have you, for this, and be glad they did while you also make a very healthy profit. This is the difference between price and value, because price is finite. Price is a dollar figure. It is what it is. Whereas value is totally different. So in any kind of exchange, if you will, with someone, while they're paying you for a certain amount of money, let's say, for your product or service, you're giving them more in value or use value than what they're paying for it. Otherwise, the law of supply and demand, or the law, basic law of economics, says they wouldn't do it because people are only going to exchange their money for something when they feel they're receiving equal or greater value as a result.
Isn't value, though, different for each person, what you deem is valuable versus – so how does somebody like yourself make it so that it's valuable, whatever the product is, the book is, the training, whatever it is? How do you make sure that value really expands to reach more people?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an excellent question, because – value is totally individual. Okay, so and that's why we say it's the relative worth or desirability. What one person finds to be of value, another person, it might be totally meaningless for another person, or it might even be opposite. what would bring one person happiness, right, may bring someone else unhappiness. So we're individuals, and so we all have our own ideas of what would make us happy and of what is valuable. And that's why, and this brings up a great point, and that is that value is always in the eyes of the beholder. And that's why in the business process, in the selling process, the sales process, the most effective salespeople understand that, and anyone who's an entrepreneur, anyone, whether they're a coach, whether they're, whatever it happens to be that they are, if they're selling widgets, it doesn't matter. They understand, the most successful people understand that selling is simply discovering what the other person wants, needs, or desires, and helping them get it, matching the benefits of your product or service with that particular person's needs, wants, or desires, or what they find to be of value. Now, when we say in a commoditized-based world where most products and services are basically the same, and really they are, we need to then, and every product has intrinsic value, and that's fine, but how do we communicate that additional value? How do we separate ourselves from everyone else in the process? And there are probably hundreds of ways to communicate that additional value, but they tend to come down to five what we call elements of value. And those are excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation. And to the degree that you can communicate those in such a way that your prospective customer finds to be of value, that's the degree that you take price totally out of the equation.
Okay, somebody's taking notes here, so I just got the...
Thank you.
So can you tell that person what... Just go over those again, because I think that's important. Excellence, appreciation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the five elements of value are excellence, consistency, attention, empathy, and appreciation.
Wonderful. And, I think that's so very important, because basically you also, to some extent, even though, again, we're selling to so many people, you still have to hone in on what that particular person or business is about, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if it's something where it's where you're selling something as part of a direct mail campaign, obviously you can't individualize it to the degree that you would like to. But that's one reason why it's so important to really understand your target market, understand the demographics, understand the psychographics, understand what at least many of them are going to want. Now, when it's a one-on-one situation, and by the way, this can absolutely be online as well, that's why it's so important to be able to ask questions and be able to listen to the answers, not listen in order to close them, but listen to them in order to truly understand what they're saying, what they need, what they want, what they desire, because great salesmanship is never about the salesperson. It's always about the customer, just like great leadership is never about the leader. It's about those people the leader is serving.
You know, it's so interesting because I totally believe that, and yet so many business owners, they start off with me, this is who I am, and build themselves up, and it's boring. I mean, I don't want to hear that, right?
Exactly.
So let's...
Go
ahead, I want to hear more.
No, I was going to say that's why it's really one of the things we focus on, and we have a team of certified go-giver speakers that go out there and they teach the message, and they work in companies as well. And one of the things we work with them on the most is understanding that, you know, it's never about any of us. It's incumbent upon all of us when we talk to a prospective customer or prospective client to be able to dig deep and never stop digging in a polite, respectful way, of course, but doing so in a way that not only do we understand what it is they're looking for or looking to accomplish, but they understand that we understand.
Right. Which is important because, again, that helps to create that value. Now,
yes.
This book has these wonderful 5 laws of success, and I want to go through them because I think that they're important. And the first law is the order important in terms of what one is more valuable than the other, or it doesn't matter?
It's not that one is more valuable. They're all equally valuable, and without any one of them, it just wouldn't be nearly as effective. But they do build upon each other. So the first one, the law of value, is actually what we call the foundational law or the foundational principle, the one upon which the others begin to build.
Okay, great. So let's talk about that. What is the law of value?
Sure. The law of value says your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, when first hearing that, it sounds a little counterintuitive. Well, it sounds very counterintuitive. Sounds counterproductive. I mean, how do I give more in value than I take in payment and survive in my business, never mind thrive? I mean, it kind of sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy, give more in value than I take in payment. So we have to go back to what we were discussing earlier about the difference between price and value, price being a dollar figure, value being the relative worth or desirability. So let's take an example of, let's say you hire an accountant to do your taxes, and this accountant charges you $1,000 to do so. That's his fee, or literally his price, $1,000. But what value does he give you in exchange that makes this so worthwhile for him? Or excuse me, that makes it worthwhile for you? Well, first, through his years of study and practice, learning his craft, but also asking you the right questions, understanding your business, understanding what you're looking to accomplish, he's able to save you $5,000 on your taxes. He also saves you countless hours of time that frees you up to do what you do best and what you'd most rather be doing. He also provides you with the peace of mind and security of knowing it was done correctly. So first, once again, we see that price, while that's finite, the $1,000 is $1,000, value is both concrete, which in this case, the $5,000 savings, very concrete. You can wrap your arms around that pretty easily, but it's also conceptual in terms of the hours that he saved you, and mostly the peace of mind and the security, which probably holds more worth or value to you than even the money that he saved you. So what he did is he gave you well over $5,000 in use value in exchange for $1,000 price or cash value. So you feel great about it, And he also made a very healthy profit, which he should, for providing you such fantastic value. But the reason this happened in the first place is because his focus was on the right place. His focus was on you and how he could serve you rather than the fee that he was receiving. And this is why we say, John David Mann, my awesome co-author of The Go-Giver, it's why we say that money is simply an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means nothing more than that the value is the focus. The value must come first, and the money you receive is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided.
You know, I think that's so important. And in your particular example, Bob, the value of somebody saving you peace of mind and time, that's priceless. You can't really put a financial number on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yep, exactly.
Okay, so the next law that you have is the law of compensation. And again, as you said, these are following one another. What is that about?
Well, the law of compensation says that your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives we touch with that exceptional value, the more money with which we'll be rewarded. So your accountant in the first example did a great job of giving you more in value than he took in payment. So if you're his client, the chances are you feel great about him, you'd do business with him again, and most likely would refer him to others. And I would say his other clients feel the same way. So our accountant is very quickly amassing what we call an army of personal walking ambassadors who are singing his praises. He's developing new clientele through referral. And to the degree that he continues to add such exceptional value to the lives of so many people, he'll continue to make more and more money. And so the big difference between laws one and two, as one of the mentors in the story, Nicole Martin, the CEO, told Joe, the protege, law number one, the law of value, represents your potential income, but it's not enough to just serve one person. Law number two, which represents the number of lives you impact with your value, that represents your actual income.
You know, I also love this book because it's not just detailed, okay, this is the law, whatever. It's this beautiful story. It's like you talked about. It's about a person who really is struggling in some way and gets information, and there's a lot of dialogue in it, and it makes it more meaningful because, like I said, it's just not, okay, here's law number one or number two. It's kind of interwoven within a wonderful story, a wonderful kind of parable.
Well, thank you. John David Mann is such a fantastic, just amazing writer and storyteller. It was really a pleasure and an honor to even get to work with him.
Now, the third law.
Yes, the law of influence.
So what do we mean by that?
Yeah. The law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. Again, counterproductive sounding at best, and perhaps even Pollyanna-ish sounding at worst. Yet, you know, when you think of it, the greatest leaders, top influencers, the highest money earners, this is simply how they run their lives and conduct their business. They're always looking for ways to add value to others, placing that person's interest even before their own. Now, if I may, Dr. Joanne, I'd like to qualify that statement because it can be a little bit confusing. When we say place the other person's interest first, we certainly don't mean that you should ever be anyone's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way, shape, or form. Absolutely not at all. It's simply as several of the mentors told Joe in the story, and as you kindly mentioned it when you were introducing me, the golden rule of business, of sales, of networking, what have you, simply says that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust? Well, there's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way of eliciting those feelings toward you from others than by what we would call moving or stepping outside yourself, moving from what we call an I focus or me focus to an other focus. Looking for ways to, as Sam, one of the mentors, told Joe, make your win about the other person's win. And when you do that, and you do that consistently with people, you're developing these relationships. You're cultivating these relationships. You are planting so many seeds of goodwill, of great will. And people just, you know like, and trust you. They see you as the go-to person, and you have a lot of influence.
And so what you're saying is not just dealing with the people that you think are going to buy from you to be able to extend that influence and to support people, but it's even beyond that, right?
Sure. Absolutely. You know, some people might never buy from you, but they may refer you to others, or they just may be someone you can do something nice for. I mean, you know, when we say we do this, we give value to others, right? That's you know, sort of the premise, if you will, and that, you know, doing so, you don't do it so much as a strategy as a way of life. You give because it's who you are, and because it's who you are, it's what you do. But when you do this, fantastic things begin to happen, not out of some magical, you know, type of reasoning. No, very logical reasoning. When you're the type of person who gains a reputation as making other people's lives better just by being around you, by being connected with you, you become a center of influence, and you become a person who other people feel good about. They want to be a part of your life.
Now, how does that work with social media? Lots of people are doing selfies and you know, talking about, okay, what I had for breakfast, or little, you know, to me, some insignificant aspects, which somebody may challenge me on that. But to me, that may not be what I want to put out to people. But how does that influence work within social media?
Sure. And there's a couple, I think, parts to that answer. One, as far as with, you know, things that are eye-focused or eye-oriented, such as selfies or what I had for dinner or what, you know, generally speaking, if that's all someone does, it doesn't really bring much value to others. Now, if someone does something like that as part of an overall social media presence, where they're typically focused on bringing value to others through whichever social medium they happen to be on, but then every so often they post something about themselves, that's fine, because you're giving someone an insight or a look into your personal life, and that might hold value to someone else who wants to see that. Absolutely, people who simply utilize social media for that purpose, it may be fun for them, and that might be the value they're receiving from it, but that's not how you're really going to build a business, utilizing social media. Social media happens to be a fantastic building business medium because you can connect with people, first of all, that you might not have been able to ever connect with on a personal level without social media, and you can do so in a very quick, effective way. What's interesting is that you know, I've heard people say, well, you can't really, you know, develop relationships unless you meet someone in person. I haven't found that to be true at all, and many others haven't found that to be true at all. But here's the key. It's still a matter of asking yourself, how do I add value to this person? See, we go back to that saying from a few minutes ago, and the saying is not, all things being equal, people will do business and refer business to those computers they know, like, and trust. Because people don't know, like, and trust computers, at least not in terms of do other than the one they use, maybe. But they know, like, and trust the people who are in front of those computers. So it always goes back to the question, how do I take my focus off myself and find a way to provide value to this person based on their individual needs, wants, and desires?
And, you know, I think that's so important. And I also like what you said, because you've got to, if you're giving people value, it's also important, especially if you're doing it in social media, people have never even meeting you face to face, that they know a little bit about you. So you're not just this mystifying person, but there's some reality to who you are, right? Which lends to that next law, which is about authenticity. And how do people know? You're going to describe this a little bit, but how do we know? Let's say, how do I know that I'm being authentic? And how do I know that that's being conveyed to someone else?
Well, I mean, I think we know we're being authentic when we feel good about ourselves, because I think it's very difficult to feel good about ourselves on an ongoing basis when we're not acting out of our authentic core. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I think other people can also see that. Get me wrong. There are many people who they do well when it comes to being a I think the correct Latin term would be phonus balonus. And they can sort of pull it off for a while. But no, I think by and large, people pretty much know and they can tell. And I think especially these days with social media, it's easier to get called out when one's not being authentic. So, but I think in terms of how we know, you know, when we're not being authentic, we tend to, it either... either our back hurts or our gut hurts or wherever it is that, you know, that core of our feelings are. So being authentic is not only good for business, it's good for having a serene life and one of happiness as well.
Right. It makes you feel better about you, right?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And we say for law number four that the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. And in the story, one of the mentors, Deborah Davenport, shared a lesson she learned that, you know, all the skills in the world, whether we're talking about sales skills or technical skills or people skills, as important as they are, and I don't want to diminish their importance, they are all very, very important. But as she said, they're also all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core, because people will know. But, you know, when you do, as we like to say, show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel good about you. They feel very comfortable with you. They know you, like you, and trust you. They want to be a part of your life. So, you know, it really makes good sense to show up authentically. And to be able to do that, we need to understand the authentic value we bring to the table that allows us to add value to the marketplace. Because while it's also good to know our weaknesses, we need to lead with our strengths. And when we know we're leading with our strengths, really able to add value to the lives of others, that's when we can show up authentically.
I so agree, Bob. And, you know, I'm thinking, because you've been in business and working with leaders and are really a thought leader extraordinaire, is there a beginning to this story? I mean, I know that I don't mean the beginning to the book in some way, but for you to how you put this together, was there something, some stem that created this, or something that came out of business or some encounter with you?
Well, John David Mann and I in our careers have both had the opportunities to be around a lot of great leaders, to have our own businesses, to study leaders. So, you know, when I first met John years ago, he was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I used to write for, and was a fantastic editor. So when I had the idea for the story itself, knowing John's background, I asked if he would be the lead writer and storyteller, and we met John and his fiance at the time, Anna, now his wife, but we met for about 3 hours one night, and we discussed everything we wanted the story to really be, to say, to do, and we both were fascinated by the fact that we each sort of saw the same basic success principles that have been around since time immemorial. So we didn't have necessarily a name for them. We were actually naming them as we wrote the book. But we had the idea of what those laws were, just we didn't have the name. So I think that's really how it came about, that we both had such similar ideas and experiences in terms of what made for success.
Now, when you're working with other leaders and mentoring other people, and teaching this, because it is a philosophy, it's an important philosophy, so I'm going to call it that, teaching this philosophy, Do any people kind of balk at this, like say, wait a minute, I mean, this doesn't make any sense. I mean, what are some of the responses or reactions? Because I was actually, yes, that was me.
Yeah, well, what we find is successful people get it, because this is how you all have been running your lives and conducting your businesses for years, well before you ever even heard of the book. So one of the things that we found was when the book first came out, we were receiving all sorts of emails and so forth from business leaders who were saying, yes, this is exactly what I've been trying to tell people. You know, this is, and a lot of people didn't believe it. But so you look at, you know, that Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule, right? And you look at the 20% of people who are pretty successful, they were doing these things anyway. And so what this did is I think it sort of gave them something to grab onto that was more tangible that they could then share with their teams. And then the next wave of email 6 months later are from the people who received the book, from people who they respected, who were very successful people. And it's because they were given the book by those people that they read it in the first place. So we'd hear from people like a roofer in Pittsburgh, and this was during the economic financial crisis, and he'd say his business had gone down the tubes. He got this book, and all of a sudden he realized his focus was totally in the wrong place. Instead of pulling back and thinking less of his customer and only of himself, he needed to shift his focus totally, and all of a sudden his business just started to grow, and we started hearing all those things. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of people who resist something like this because it's not congruent with what they've been hearing all their lives, that people who succeed in business are mean and horrible and, you know, take advantage of others and cheat their way and blah, 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 right? And so, you know, that's the message we're given by so many. That's why the law of receptivity, the fifth law, which is the key to effective giving, is to stay open to receiving. That can be such a difficult one for people to grasp because they're not used to receiving, because they think there's something bad about receiving because that's what they've been taught and that's what they've learned and accepted.
How do you help people change that? Because I agree with you. I have come across a lot of people who, even if you say thank you or you did a great job, they're even reluctant to receive mm-hmm. compliments, let alone
right.
money or gifts or whatever. Mm-hmm. How do you help them, since that's all part of this wonderful philosophy and package, shift that so that they can mm-hmm. be ready to receive?
Sure. And thank you for the nice compliment. It begins with awareness. It begins with awareness because, you know, there are people who do a fantastic job in the giving of value to others, touching a lot of lives, and they place themselves in a very good position of being able to receive and being very profitable and being very abundant, and yet they will then sabotage themselves unconsciously, right before the receiving part begins. And they don't necessarily know why. They don't even know that they're doing that. So once you can have a person understand that, again, awareness is the first step. If you like anything else, right? If you're not aware that there's a problem, or if you're not aware of what the problem is, there's nothing you can do to fix it. So first it's awareness. Then it's understanding. Then it's starting to say, okay, well, why? You know, why is this the case? Why have I bought into a false premise that, you know, there's something naturally righteous about being poor and that there's something evil about being wealthy, right? Or, you know, and do I really believe that? I, not consciously, but do I somehow believe that unconsciously? Is this a message that I had learned and have sort of taken it? And then once you're at that point, now you can start to point yourself in a different direction. Now you can start reading books about prosperity. My friend Randy Gage is, and there are many wonderful speakers and writers on prosperity. Randy Gage is my favorite. And I read his prosperity blog every time it's published in his Prosperity TV channel. I watch every episode. Why? Because we get plenty of negative messages about money all the time, from everywhere, from the media, from, you know, people we know, from whatever, school, what have you. So we need to consciously be studying abundance. And as we do that and we begin to focus on this and begin to let it happen, wow, now we understand something, that just like breathing out, you've also got to breathe in. Just as the tides roll out, they also need to roll back in. You know, we give, we receive. Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same opposite concepts. They're two sides of the same coin. They work in tandem. The key, though, again, now we go back to the very beginning premise, the key is where we focus. When you focus on the giving and then allow the receiving, now abundance and prosperity is able to be a big part of your life.
You know, I love that because it's so true. And we have been conditioned to, many of us, to not feel comfortable with receiving, and also to look at business like it's just everything's about money. And what you are saying, and I totally agree, is it's really all about value. Value seems to be the key principle
that's
involved in everything. Tell us about this book. Because it's a new extended version that I'm going to have to get. Tell us a little bit about this, the Go-Giver, and what's in this new version, Bob.
Mm-hmm. Well, because it's a business parable, the story stays exactly the same. We didn't touch that. But once it hit the 500,000 mark in sales, our publisher came to John and me and asked, you know, is there something you'd like to even add to the book, to use the vernacular in the book, that can provide even more value to sort of celebrate the milestone of the half-million mark. And so we thought, well, we know that people often have questions, good questions, about the book and about the story and the background and so forth. So we thought we would do a question and answer section in there, which we did. But also, we have so many businesses, companies, religious institutions, schools, book clubs that use the book as to study. And many have told us that they've, you know, put together their own study guides for it to make it easier. So what we did is we put together a discussion guide in the back of the book, so that those businesses, companies, churches, synagogues, mosques, you know, schools, what have you, could simply go to the back of the book and let us lead the discussion for them.
You know, I think that's a great idea, because this is a book that people do need to talk about, because some of these principles may be foreign to them, and the more you talk about it and share and go over specific details in your life and your business, the more people get it, and I think that's a great addition. You have a quote that I love, and it says, "You cannot control the economy, but you can absolutely control your economy." Would you explain that? I love that. I'm going to put that all over the place.
Well, you know, the fact is that the general economy, we don't have any say over. There are things that are beyond our control. We can wish they weren't, and that's fine. But, you know, successful people look at the world. They see the world as it is. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't try to improve it, and that they don't continually add value to improve it, and that they don't do. That's how inventions happen, and that's how, right? You know, I mean, but what we do is we tap into what is in order to make happen what can be. So when it comes to, you know, the general state of the economy, what the government's doing, what we have no say in that. However, we do have a total say in our own business, which means that when, you know, the economy's not where we'd like it to be, it means we can double down in terms of finding more, finding better, finding creative ways to add more value to the process, to make ourselves more valuable, to attract more of the customers. We might have to work harder to do it. We might have to work smarter to do it. It might be both, but we can control our economy. We can be successful even within an unsuccessful, you know, financial construct, if you will, environment.
And, you know, that's so important, because people say, and I've heard this for the last couple of years from people, oh, the reason this happened to so-and-so's business is because of the economy, the bad economy. And what you're saying is much more powerful, and again, puts the control back in the individual or the entrepreneur, rather than the blame out there somewhere that we don't have any control.
Sure, and it, you know, it's not that it doesn't make it tougher when it's a bad economy, but then again, at that point, those who are not going to be able to make it, when the economy is good again, you're going to have a lot more of the market share. So, you know, we can look at it that way. But, you know, but that doesn't mean certainly it's fun. And again, I'm big on being realistic as to what is. There's no question about that. And it doesn't do any good to say, oh, yeah, the economy's great right now, everything's rosy, and then do the same thing you're doing. No, you need to be finding ways to, you know, create more, you know, when the economy's not where you want it to be. And, of course, you can be doing that when the economy is good. And when you do that, when the economy's bad, you're still going to be the go-to person. You know, I see more businesses who really – do not do a good job both with the customer service aspect, but also the overall general customer experience. And they go out of business not because of the economy. They go out of business because they didn't do a good job. And, you know, they might blame the economy because it's always easier to blame somebody else. But, you know, I think if more businesses really understood that the customer, the consumer, is king, is queen, they would there'd be a lot more companies that would stay in business, good environment or bad.
I think that's so important. I remember being in an airport and everything was shut down because it was a huge storm, and there we were at the gate waiting, and the person who was there supposedly giving out information was silent. And I remember going over to her and saying, just tell people something, even that we're delayed, you're waiting for information, but to have people kind of not know what's going on. And I said to her, that's just bad customer service. I probably came on a little bit too heavy, but again, I was trying to say, we need some communication. We need something from you to allay people's discomfort or fear or whatever else was going on. So customer service is really important.
I was just going to say, I think that the entire experience, and you see companies that do it well, and you see those who do it lousy, both small companies and large companies, and it's really the culture itself. When the company culture is such that people are treated respectfully, and when I say that, I mean their own people are treated respectfully, those people are going to be much more apt to treat the customers respectfully. But it really is a company culture. I mean, you see it; it's pretty pervasive.
And in a way, that's all about value. I mean, how you treat
it is absolutely.
Right?
There was negative value in what that person was doing. It wasn't even just nothing. It was negative because it was probably making people mad, feeling as though they weren't even being acknowledged with something.
Right. So we are at the end, although I would love to do more with you because I think that what you have to offer people is so incredible. If they follow these five laws, Bob, can they instantaneously get successful, be successful, reach success?
Well, I don't know how much anything is instantaneous as far as, you know, the ultimate goal you might have or that one might have, but you will instantaneously begin to advance in that direction. But, you know, people ask the question, and it's a good question, well, does doing it this way, you know, take longer, even though it's, you know, better in the end, does it take longer this way than doing it the traditional eye-focused way? Absolutely not. It takes shorter doing it this way because, remember, this way is all about the customer, providing value to customers, being focused on providing value to customers. And if someone's a customer, they are much more likely to do business with someone who they know is focused on them rather than someone who's only focused on themselves and getting their money. So while I don't think anything is instantaneous, it will absolutely help you become successful in the way you want to become successful faster, and you'll begin the process right away.
It's like having a conversation with someone and you're asking that person pertinent questions about who they are and their lives and whatever, and afterwards they walk away thinking, what a great conversation, because they were able to present more about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Tell people, Bob, how they can get a hold of this new edition, all your other valuable books and speaking engagements, and find out more about you.
Oh, thank you. I just invite people to visit the website, which is burg.com. And while there, they can just get any information they want. Everything's there. How to connect with me online, the blog, our Influence and Success Insights. You can get the chapter one of the book, or click right through to go to Amazon.com to get it, or at your local bookstore. But yeah, come to Berg.com, hang around for a while, and say hello. And Dr. Joanne, I just so appreciate you and everything you do, and you're having me on your show today. It was really a joy.
Bob, you are a treasure, and it's been an absolute pleasure. And people, the book is called The Go-Giver, A Little Story, Which Isn't That Little, About a Powerful Business Idea, and I support it wholeheartedly. Thank you so much for being such a valuable guest.
Oh, thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And we're shifting gears next week. Next week we have Gina Citoli, who's going to be talking about music can change and heal your life. And she is someone who goes around the world with her Awakened Entertainment. She's a visionary singer and songwriter, and her music is transformative. So tune in next week, Wednesday, November 25th, and you will be enlightened. Thank you so much for joining us. And remember, go to Bob Berg. He has some wonderful tips. And get a hold of this book. If you want to get a hold of me, you can go to docwhite.org. Find out about a lot of giveaways, and also poweryourlifenetwork.com. Thanks so much. And remember, you have the power within you to transform your life and your day. Thanks for being with us.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.